good morning. Welcome to Atheist Talk Radio. Today's date is Sunday, February 5th. My name is Mahad Muhammad, and I will be your host today. In the studio, we have one of the unholy Ghostbusters, Hertzy Hertz. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to Atheist Talk, KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We appreciate all of you for tuning into the show today. Again, like I've said, is Sunday the 6th, 2017. My name is Mahad Muhammad, and today we will have
Alicia Donahue, one of the organizers of the Women's March for St. Paul.
Welcome, Alicia.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for being on the radio with us. Be sure to stay tuned for the American Atheist Viewpoint in the fourth segment of the hour. We welcome listener interaction during the live show with your phone calls to 952-946-6205 or your emails to radio@minnesotaatheist.org. So today's discussion will be the Women's March, and I'm sure a lot of you know why the March on Washington and here in Minnesota and throughout the country and also around the world happened, and that is what we're here to discuss.
Thank you very much, Mahad. Alicia, excuse me, tongue-tied this morning. Alicia, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Awesome. So let's start at the beginning. When did you as an organizer first hear about the march?
So I first heard about it on a Facebook group, which was Stand Up Minnesota, or is now Stand Up Minnesota. It was Pantsuit Nation at the time. And somebody had posted on there and said, there's a march on Washington, and wouldn't it be awesome if we had one here in Minnesota? That was shortly after the election, I would say, probably the next day or shortly thereafter.
Awesome. And then as it got, so was it on that site then that you saw it becoming bigger and bigger with all these different people saying, hey, by the way, let's do one in Denver and Los Angeles and other states in the country?
No, it was really interesting how all of that came about. So, initially there was a woman in Hawaii that had posted on her own Facebook, that she wanted to march in Washington. She created an event and invited 40 of her friends. And when she woke up the next day, there was over 10,000 people that had RSVP'd. And at that point, she realized that this was something, that she needed help with. And so that's when she connected with, some of the organizers that ran the March on Washington. For here in Minnesota, it started with that Facebook post in our Minnesota page. And myself and a couple other people responded. And within a week, we had, set up our very first meeting, which was on November 20th. And we had 40 incredible women show up ready to assist and start planning. And we didn't know then what we were getting ourselves into or that this was going to become a national and then a global movement. So we were there from very close to the beginning of, when some of the sister marches started popping up. And then we got connected with our national organization, and they added us to some Facebook groups to assist us with planning. And that's when we started seeing all of the other states and cities and then, of course, countries start joining. So it wasn't right away that we knew that we were going to be a part of something this huge.
And I have to say unique. I mean, I think this is the first protest that has hit, obviously the six continents, but I think this is the first one that has hit the seventh continent of Antarctica.
Yes.
I'm a bit of a nerd about Antarctica some days. So what kind of reservations did you guys have when you were first starting out?
I don't know if there were any reservations. I think when we got together on November 20th, We had planned 2 hours for our meeting, and we're just going to start with introductions and then dive into dividing up into subcommittees, which is how we were going to try to accomplish everything that needed to get done. And we ended up spending the entire 2 hours just on introductions. It was very clear to us that people were very moved by this past election and ultimately the results. And so they needed some time to process that and talk through it. And we felt it was really important, since we were going to be together for the next 10 to 11 weeks, that we, you know, give people a space to talk about that.
So you guys kind of became a support group as well as an organizational group.
Definitely. And so I think... everyone was very clear that they felt that they needed to do something. There were, of course, some differences for why they were getting involved. There were a lot of people that were, you know, getting involved for the first time. There were some mother-daughter teams, which was incredible. One of our planning committee members is only 15. So it was amazing to see the support. So I don't know if anybody had any reservations when we got going. Of course, as we were in the planning process, there were trials and tribulations, and we quickly realized that this was much more of a time commitment than I think any of us had thought, but we knew it was going to be worth it in the end.
When did all the organizers get involved? Can you tell us how long ago that was, and what other organizations you guys have reached out to from the beginning? Because I assume that all the organizers and everyone else who was volunteering was doing this as volunteers. None of you guys were getting paid for it. So,
correct. Yeah. So there was originally three leaders, I guess, if you will, three of us that have responded on Facebook. And then we brought in a fourth to chair our fundraising committee. So we had a logistics committee, my committee, which was the engagement and street team / social media. So my committee is the one that did a lot of the engagement with other organizations, communities, and so all of that started in November, and very quickly we realized that we very much wanted to make sure that everyone's voices were heard at this march, and so we, in our subcommittee, we compiled a list of over 260 companies, organizations, communities that we felt we wanted to invite to the planning table, invite to the march, and invite to support us, in a long-term partnership, not just for the march, because we very much saw January 21st as the beginning. And so we ended up having several organizations either endorse us or sponsor us, including Women and Allies Minnesota, 15 Now Minnesota, NAACP Minneapolis. We have Isroon, Women Winning, Planned Parenthood, Gender Justice. I mean, the list kind of goes on and on. It was so incredible the amount of support that we had from the communities.
So here's a question. As you had got up to, let's say, like the 2 weeks before the march was actually going to happen, how did you feel? Were you starting to get nervous about how many people were going to show up?
Yes, I watched that number daily, and we saw, as we got closer, our PR leader put out press releases, and we started getting more and more media coverage, which helped us broaden, the amount of people that were seeing seeing the event. And, it was in those last 2 weeks that our numbers drastically increased. And so when we started planning, we were hoping for, 5,000 people to show up. To us, that would be a success. And as we got closer, within the last few weeks, we were looking at 15 to 20 to 25,000 people that had RSVP'd as confirmed, and then another 20,000 people that had identified themselves as interested on our Facebook event page. And so we were watching those numbers and, of course, watching the weather on a daily basis to see what it was going to be like. And then we saw it was supposed to rain, and we were a little fearful that that might impact the turnout that we had.
So what was your first reaction then to the number of people who actually started showing up? Because I'll admit, I myself went, and I don't think we actually got into the parking lot of the St. Paul College. And I know that that's a pretty big parking lot.
Yeah, I mean, the day of, I think that it was overwhelming, and we were so proud of Minnesota for hearing the call to action. So our final RSVPs that we had anticipated that day was about 25 to 30,000. And the St. Paul Police Department, who we partnered with very closely to make sure this was a safe and, family-friendly event, they kept telling us that we should expect more, but we were really fearful of the weather. However, I got up to St. Paul College at about 9:30 after sort of running around down at the Capitol, finishing some things. It was when I got up to St. Paul College that I saw the incredible amount of people that were already there.
All right. I'm sorry. I'm actually going to have to stop you there because we have to stop for a commercial, but we will return just in a couple moments.
Yes, please stay with us through the break. You are listening to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. To Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. My name is Mahad Muhammad. If you have a comment or a question, please call us at 952-946-6205. We do welcome calls, so please call. Or send an email to radio@minnesotaatheist.org. Hertzy Hertz and Alicia Donahue, welcome back to Atheist Talk.
Thank you. And I just do have a quick thing for our dues paying members. We do have, just a reminder, we do have the board elections this February. And then also we do have our donor of the week. This week it is the attendees of the 5th Sunday Flying Spaghetti Monster Dinner. Thank you guys for your support. And that was a wonderful dinner, by the way. So I look forward to the next one, which I believe is in April. So Alicia, welcome back.
Thank you.
Awesome. So when we left off, you were talking about looking out at the parking lot of St. Paul College and all the people who attended. Did you know that there were people actually coming in from other parts to join in too?
Not initially. There was so much going on. I think it was when St. Paul Police had radioed us and said that they were shutting down all of our pathways 40 minutes prior to when the march was starting, because our initial plan was only to shut down 10 minutes prior to give them time to secure the route. Mm-hmm. And I think at that moment I realized that, if they're forced to shut down the roads because it's just overwhelmed with pedestrians, I knew that there was just, an amazing amount of people there.
94 was a parking lot in some areas.
Yes.
It was awesome.
So our final numbers were between 90 to 100,000 people, which was four times what we were expecting, and just absolutely amazing. It was a day that I will never forget.
All right, so for people who may not have heard much about the march before, what was the overall message that you wanted to achieve as an organizer?
That's a great question. So our mission was to come out in numbers too great for our new administration to ignore on their first day in office. and make sure that they knew that we were here, we were listening, we were watching, and that we're going to hold them to the highest standards possible, that we believe in, you know, women's rights are human rights, as well as all of the other guiding principles that we had, you know, ending violence, reproductive rights, LGBTQIA rights, disability rights. But it really was truly that, that we wanted to make sure that our voices were heard.
So I like adding in fun questions into my interviews. So one of my favorites for this particular subject is, what was your favorite sign? Internet signs do count. So it doesn't have to be necessarily in Minnesota.
Sure. There were so many amazing signs. People spent so much time and energy, and there were some really beautiful ones. But I think my favorite sign that I saw was a gentleman that had come, and I don't know if he was with his significant other, if he came by himself, but his sign said, "I'm with her," and then there were arrows literally all around the wording, and so it was just so powerful that, you know, that he would come and support this.
Absolutely, and one more. I'm just going to ask Mahad the same question. Yeah. So, Mahad, what was your favorite sign?
Oh, there were so many. I think some of my favorite were, there was "Don't booby trap my uterus," I think was one. That was just really hilarious. "Men of quality do not fear equality." And then just my favorite, I think, was "The future is nasty." Yeah.
Admittedly, I'm a huge geek, so my favorite was a picture of Princess Leia saying, "A woman's place is in the resistance."
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. So as an organizer, how did you feel about the guests and speakers that you guys had?
I think they did a phenomenal job. Of course, we would have loved to include even more people, but because there were so many people that wanted to speak. But I think that, you know, Nikema Levy-Pounds and Raisha Williams and Ilhan Omar were some of my favorites. I think that they all did an amazing job, you know, helping the crowd recognize, you know, get excited, be energized, but also recognize that this is just the beginning, which is very much what our message was. And we, of course, could not be more thrilled with our MC, Nancy Lyons. She just knocked it out of the park.
Yes, I loved her thing about saying that she had a big mouth. I was like, yes, because I can hear you.
Yes.
I know that there was a lot of criticism kind of from both sides about this, about these marches and such. Do you have any opinions on that? And it doesn't have to be like an official as an organizer. I mean, it can be personal opinions as well.
Sure. You know, I think we recognized pretty early on that there were going to be people that were highly critical of the event. And that's okay, because I think what makes America amazing is our ability to disagree with one another or have a difference of opinion and allow that to be heard and have space for that conversation to happen. And so we tried not to take it to heart in the same respects that we absolutely listened to the criticism, made changes, and did everything that we could. You know, we recognize that we were not going to please everybody, but we did our best. And our planning committee of over 100 amazing women dedicated so many hours and sleepless nights to accomplishing this, you know, this task at hand. And I think as far as the criticism goes, it's probably always going to be there. And all we can do is take that into consideration and make it better the next time.
Absolutely. So I have another fun question. What did you think of the pussy hats?
I thought that they were amazing. We had a couple people knit a lot of our planning committee members a hat. It was very sweet. People were so kind and generous. And I think that it's amazing that people, you know, took this message that our president had said, and then took back their power and said, you know, no, like, this is I'm going to take back that power and I'm going to wear this pussy hat. Like, I thought it was just amazing. And it shows that, that we're not going to stand by and that bigotry and hate, become normalized.
One of the things that a lot of people have been saying, those who are in support of the new administration that came in have been give them a chance. But there was also, I think, another side to it of folks who partly have been opposing the new administration, who have come out and said in ways that I think I personally contend with, where some of the stuff that they've said is Trump is the cure. I think it was Senator Jeff Merkley out of Oregon who said that he brings everybody together. And we have about 20 seconds, so I'd like to see what your thoughts are once we come back from break. Please stay with us through the break. You are listening to Atheists Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Elections make for changes, as we have come to realize, especially this year. 2017 and definitely the next 4 years will be causing us big changes. And this is not just a women's issue. It is not immigrants or refugees issue, as we've come to realize. This will also affect the free thought community and those who consider themselves secular and care about secular values will be affected in big ways, as we've come to know now. With the new administration's drafting new executive orders that will take pretty much a wrecking ball to the division that exists or has existed for a long time between church and state in this country. So welcome back to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. If you have questions or a comment, please call us at 952-946-6205 or email to radio@minnesotaatheist.org. My name is Mahad Muhammad. Atheist Talk is produced with funding from the Minnesota Atheists, the Humanists of Minnesota, and Cucumbers Restaurant. If you would like to advertise on this program, please contact us at radio@minnesotaatheist.org. This radio program is put together by dedicated volunteers and the generous donations of listeners. If you're able to help with the donation, please consider doing so at our radio fund page. Minnesota Atheist is a 501c3 tax-deductible organization. You can find more information on the Humanists of Minnesota at humanistsofminnesota.org. Our music is composed by member Brent Michael Davids. Thank you, Brent. Check the schedule for book clubs, discussion groups, pub crawls, movie nights, and other gatherings throughout the year, as well as sign up for meetups. Listen to podcasts of previous programs, subscribe to the Atheist Weekly email, become a member at minnesotaatheist.org. You can also join the Humanists of Minnesota at humanistsofminnesota.org, where they'll have a lot of their information. And now back to our final segment with Alicia Donahue and Hertzy Hertz. Welcome back.
Thank you. Also, speaking of cucumbers, actually, I believe there's a meetup today for Cucumbers Brunch after the show.
Come one, come all.
Oh, yes. It looks like we also have a caller. But until that goes, Mahad, you had a question for Alicia just before the break, so we can start that.
Yeah. So my question to you, Alicia, I'll repeat it for those who weren't tuned in before, was that we've had two sides of, I think, kind of the same coin in a way, of folks who have said that you know, give the new administration a chance. But we've also had folks like one of the quotes of Senator Jeff Merkley from Oregon, a Democrat, who had said that, you know, Trump is the cure here. He brings everybody together. What are your thoughts?
I will have to say I I laughed out loud when somebody had told me to give the new administration a chance. My response to that is trust and respect is earned. It's not given.
Yes.
And at no point in his campaign did he earn my trust or my respect. Everything, so much of his campaign was riddled with hate and bigotry and disrespect to so many groups of people. I truly don't understand how when he said he could go out into the middle of Times Square and shoot somebody and he could still win the election. I don't understand how that wasn't the end, or when he mocked an individual with disabilities, and then the grabbing and just, at no point did he earn my respect or my trust. And so no, I wasn't going to give him a chance. I was going to hold him accountable. The leader of the free world needs to be somebody that that we can look up to as a role model. And he certainly is no role model that I would want any of the children to see. And within his first week, all of the executive orders that he signed, advancing the approval of the Keystone XL and the Dakota Access Pipeline, defunding sanctuary cities, the immigration and refugee ban. I mean, there was just so much within his very first week that showed us that at no point are we going to be able to just stand back and give him a chance.
I agree with everything you said, and the list is endless. It is endless of the things that he has said. One of my favorite writers is Octavia Butler, and one of my favorite quotes of hers is, "Choose your leaders with wisdom and forethought. To be led by a coward is to be controlled by all that coward fears. To be led by a fool is to be led by the opportunists who control the fool. To be led by a thief is to offer up your most precious treasures to be stolen. To be led by a liar is to ask to be told lies. To be led by a tyrant is to sell yourself and those you love into slavery."
Did she have a crystal ball?
Right.
Yeah.
I have to agree with all that. I was on a Facebook at some point and somebody said something about how do you feel about the election? And I'm like, and I know this sounds strange, but I'm like, I'm having fond recollections of George Bush. and then when he was president, not that he was great by any stretch of the imagination, but it was one of those that's like, if we could have that again for 4 years, I'll take it. Yeah. Instead of this, who is actively trying to do so much separation. Yeah.
Did our caller disappear?
I guess they did.
Okay. Yeah.
Sad
okay.
Face. Oh, well. but now we are just over 2 weeks away from the march. So where do you see the movement going?
That is another question that we've been working hard to try to answer. I think when the organizers got together, we knew that we had to do something and that we needed to bring Minnesota together. At no point did we ever expect it to become what it did. And then we had thought maybe we would have a couple of days to rest and sort of, maybe get back to normal operating, standards within our lives. But the desire and the hunger that people have showed us for, what do we do next? Who can I call? Who can I write to? What can I do? We have taken that and run with it. So we, as a leadership team, have brought in additional leaders and are looking at, where do we go from here? We are looking at, do we continue to follow the national mission and values, or do we tailor it to something that Minnesota needs? Because I think what we are fortunate to have here in Minnesota is so many nonprofit organizations that are already doing some amazing work. And so we're trying to find our footing within all of that to make sure that we're not duplicating efforts that others are already doing, that we find a way to support them instead. One thing that we are absolutely, going to do moving forward regardless of how that looks, is connecting our organizations that are already out there and connecting our communities, because that's the only way that we're going to come together and to be able to recognize that we are all wanting the same things in life. And so I think, you know, amazing things can happen when we, you know, connect one another. And because our march had such a broad range that people were marching for, we have the opportunity and that support from organizations that maybe wouldn't have originally connected with one another. And so that's something that's really important to us moving forward. And the rest of it will sort of fall, you know, in line.
So that looks like a perfect place. Is there like a website or Facebook page that you want to plug where people can connect?
Yeah, so our website is Women's March MN for Minnesota.com. So womensmarchmn.com. And you can also find us on Facebook by searching Women's March Minnesota.
Awesome. And so, and as we move forward, do you have any concerns or worries about, you know, where we're going to be heading?
As a nation, I worry every day.
Well, how about just as the movement then?
Yeah, as a movement, I think, you know, really it's just finding what's going to benefit Minnesota the most, because there are amazing women and men and non-gender identifying individuals all across the country that are working every day. And I think here in Minnesota, you know, we have to just find, you know, what we need, because we've got some things happening here at home, you know, that could drastically change things as well. And so I think for the movement, I'm just excited to see where it goes and excited to continue the partnerships and meeting new people and working together.
So is a Women's March, are you guys going to partner with some of the other marches that seem to be popping up? I know there's a scientist march for sure. I wouldn't be surprised if there's more marches popping up. Are you guys going to try and partner with those?
Absolutely. We want to support them as much as we can. We actually have been contacted by both the Scientist March and the organizers for the Tax Day March. And they have said, you know, can you come to our meetings and share some of your perspectives with us? We don't want to recreate the wheel either. You did an amazing job. And so we're flattered by that. And we recognize that there are other, you know, Black Lives Matter and other organizations that have been marching and rallying and protesting for so much longer, but we absolutely will share what we know and, you know, do what we can to support those marches. And so we're doing calls to action and posting on our Facebook page, as well as sending emails about all of the rallies and protests and marches that are happening. And so we absolutely support all of their efforts.
Awesome. Mahad, do you have any other questions?
I think one of the, obviously we know, or we don't know where, one of the two parties in power now, where things will end in 4 years. But also, I think on the other side, the Democrats also have a lot of soul searching to do, to a certain extent. What are your plans locally of getting involved in the legislature, bills that might come up or some that have already come up, we've seen here, even locally here?
Absolutely. That's one of the things that we're working hard on and making sure that we're, one, not duplicating efforts done by others, but instead supporting them. One thing that we have just started is something that we call our Spotlight Series. This week, on Thursday, we had a Spotlight Series with the American Civil Liberties Union of Minnesota, the ACLU.
We love those guys.
And had an hour-long meeting with them on Facebook Live, where they shared, you know, information on bills that are happening here in Minnesota that, you know, will target and limit our right to free speech. And so they shared, you know, who you can write to and what you can do about that, as well as just educating people about those bills that are happening. And so that's our plan moving forward, as well as every week to have one or two spotlight videos Doing those call to action.
Thank you so much, Alicia. I'd like to thank our guest for tuning in to Atheist Talk. My name is Mahant. Thank you, Hertzi. Thank you, Alicia.
Hello and welcome to the American Atheist Viewpoint for Sunday, February 5th, 2017. I'm Nick Fish, the National Program Director for American Atheists, and thank you as always for joining us. This week we've had two actions from Donald Trump coming out of the administration that I think it is necessary for us to talk about. The first one, the biggest piece of news probably this week was the nomination of Neil Gorsuch, who is a 10th Circuit Court 10th Circuit Court of Appeals judge, someone very much in the mold of Antonin Scalia, somebody who is mentioned as a Scalia 2.0, as somebody who shares that textual judicial philosophy and very much on the right side of the political spectrum, nominated to fill the seat that was left vacant now more than a year ago at the death of Antonin Scalia. This is the seat that President Obama nominated Merrick Garland to fill, but who did not receive any Senate hearings or any meetings from the Republican majority in the Senate. Neil Gorsuch has some troubling views on the separation of religion from government. I think the first thing that we should mention is that Judge Gorsuch was on the side of the court in the 10th Circuit that ruled in favor of Hobby Lobby in that case that essentially said that the store itself could exercise religious expression, and that the accommodations that were created in the Affordable Care Act for those companies to not have to provide contraception weren't adequate, and that requiring them to provide insurance to their employees that would cover contraception if they believed that it resulted in the death of a fetus, that was a burden on their religious expression. And so that's a problem, obviously. In that ruling, they extended an exemption essentially that was given to churches and religious nonprofits and religious groups to what are called closely held corporations. And so essentially saying that if it's a family-owned business, even if it's a secular business, that they should be able to impose their religious judgments on their employees. The other one that he cited on opposite of church-state separation would be the Little Sisters of the Poor. This was another religious freedom case where this is a religious nonprofit, and they did receive an exemption from the requirement that insurance plans cover contraception, and all they had to do essentially was fill out a form saying, we as an organization don't want to cover contraception, so we're opting out. And if our employees would like contraception, they can get it directly through the insurance plan. Well, the Little Sisters of the Poor didn't even want to do that. They didn't want to fill out the form claiming that exemption because that would make them complicit in an evil, they said, which, filling out the form to claim a religious exemption, the idea that that is somehow an imposition on your religious freedom is ridiculous. And the Supreme Court, Gorsuch was on the dissenting side of this, and the Supreme Court declined to hear that case. So thankfully, that's one where, his views did not enter into the Supreme Court and were not entered into law. One other thing just to add on Judge Gorsuch is he has written a book talking about assisted suicide, talking about the right to end one's life. He is an Episcopalian, but he is Jesuit educated. He has a PhD in philosophy from Oxford, and he's written a book talking about the right to end one's own life, suicide, and all that. And in it, takes to task some of the reasoning that exists in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which was a 1992 Supreme Court case that kind of shored up and modified the Roe versus Wade Supreme Court case. It is revealing to think about the way that he looks at the way life goes and the conceptions we have of life. That's something we're going to be digging into more later, but it certainly does shine a light on the likely views that he has on abortion. So it's something that we definitely need to keep an eye on and that we will be digging into more on his views. The second one is the executive order coming out of Donald Trump's White House on religious freedom. This has not yet gone into effect. This is merely a leaked draft. But what it would do is it essentially says that, and I'm going to read a quote here, quote, when providing social services, education or health care, earning a living, seeking a job or employing others, receiving government grants or contracts, or otherwise participating in the marketplace, the public square, or interfacing with federal, state, or local governments, that the federal, that's the end quote, this executive order would protect religious freedom in every walk of life for every organization, including closely held for-profit corporations and individuals. So what this does is it would create essentially a complete exemption from the law for people who claim moral or religious objections to same-sex marriage, to abortion, to interacting with trans people, even to premarital sex. And it also obviously would impact the ability of employees to access contraception and abortion through their health insurance plan if their employer objects to paying for insurance that covers it. The White House has so far refused to confirm or comment on the leak of this executive order. But this is very much the nightmare scenario as far as executive orders on religious freedom are concerned. This would protect the tax-exempt status of any organization that believes, speaks, or acts, or declines to act in accordance with the belief that marriage is or should be recognized as the union of one man and one woman, that sexual relations are properly reserved for such a marriage, male and female and their equivalents refer to an individual's immutable biological sex as objectively determined by anatomy, physiology, or genetics at or before birth, and that human life begins at conception and merits protection at all stages of life. This is the exact language that's in the First Amendment Defense Act, so-called, the bill that is most likely coming through Congress in the very near term. This would be a complete redefinition of religious freedom in this country. It is most likely overly broad, too sweeping, and it would exceed executive authority that the president has for executive orders. It would undermine every civil rights law that exists in this country, which, by the way, is not to say that there are in federal civil rights laws actually in effect protecting LGBT people, because there aren't. But the same argument can be made for any other thing, but for any other civil rights law. If you believe that the woman's place is in the home and that women shouldn't be working, you know, what is the substantive difference between providing an exemption under marriage equality versus providing an exemption under existing civil rights law saying that you have to hire or that you can't discriminate against women? There is no substantive difference there. And so this notion that this is protecting quote-unquote real religious freedom is bunk. What it's doing is protecting a particular brand of religious freedom, namely one that wants to discriminate against LGBT people. So this is, and abortion. And so this is something we're going to be monitoring. If this order passes, every atheist group out there will be going to the mattresses and we'll be fighting this. So that's all the time I have for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. As always, you can learn more about our work or become a member at atheists.org. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next week.